Hello and welcome to the Project Management course. My name is Laura Sinnott. I'm on the faculty at Carnegie Mellon University in the Hines School of Public Policy and Management. I am also responsible for managing two master's degree programs at the Hines School, a Master of Medical Management for physicians, as well as a Master of Science of Healthcare Policy and Management, which is for full-time students. The project management course will follow this outline. Number one is an overview of project management. There will actually be two presentations on this. This is the first one. We will then spend quite a bit of time on what we call the triple constraint of project management. And these are the three critical dimensions of any project, which need to be clearly defined as well as closely monitored throughout the project. And that is dealing with the project scope or size or magnitude of the project, the time, which is the schedule for the project, and then the cost, the budget that you set up for your project and then monitor throughout its duration. Also critically important is project quality. There are some people who feel that it should be a quadruple constraint rather than a triple constraint, and the quality should be the fourth dimension. That is how critically important it is. We will talk about risk management, trying to anticipate what your risks might be and preparing action plans for how you want to deal with those potential risks of your project. And then finally, we'll talk about some leadership issues with managing your project team, working with your project sponsors or owners, and being an advocate for your project, and then also interacting with your stakeholders on the project. So just to get us started here, what is a project? Well, a project, as defined here, is a series of tasks, and that those tasks have a start and an end point. And so they are bounded by your schedule. There's a certain period of time in which you have to complete these tasks. There are some resources that are going to be allocated to those tasks so that you can complete them. And then what your desired results are, your deliverables for the project. Also as part of this is what your scope is of your project. So you can see here I already have the triple constraint here where we're talking about the time, the cost, as well as the scope. Now a project can be clearly differentiated from what we'll call ordinary or regular work. Your regular work is repetitive. You've done it more than once. You probably do it quite frequently. Some of us feel like we do the same things over and over again. For me, that happens every semester. And it's more routine. It's something that might even be part of your position description. But projects are different that way, especially how we're going to define them here. These are things that are done just once. And it's new. When you're finished, something exists that didn't exist before. It's not part of your regular position, and it generally operates outside of your normal routine business, which means that especially in healthcare, it's on top of your regular work rather than instead of. So in most organizations, your responsibilities are not taken away in order to make room for a large project. They are generally, you're expected to do the project on top of your regular responsibilities, which adds to the pressure of the project and which adds to the critical need for some sort of organization to make sure that you can manage this on top of the regular business operation and the interruptions that happen. So why do we do projects? Obviously, there are certain aspects of our work that are not within the regular operation of business, and there's some recognition of that, that there has to be some sort of concerted and managed effort in order to organize these activities. So it might be in response to some new market demand, maybe some new need in the organization to perhaps create some efficiencies or improve outcomes. It might be that a major customer has requested this. There might be a technological advance that has to be implemented, or a new legal requirement. So there are many reasons for projects, and this is just a recognition that they need their own special organization and resource allocation within the organization to make sure that they go off as planned. So some features of projects are that there is some sort of responsibility and authority for this project, and we'll talk in a little bit about the various roles in a project, but there's some authority. Somebody is responsible for getting this done and has the authority to make that happen. As I mentioned before, there's some sort of time frame associated with this, a beginning and an end point. There is a budget affiliated with the project, or at least there should be, where resources can be allocated, resources in terms of people on the project. They also are most likely not full-time on the project, so their time needs to be closely allocated. You might have some resources in terms of equipment, supplies. You might have a major piece of software that you're purchasing. But all of this needs to be part of the resource allocation. And then some very clear desired outcomes. What exactly are you hoping to achieve with this project? And as specific as you can get in terms of defining these deliverables, the easier it will be for you throughout the project. And that's why we're going to spend quite a bit of time on scope definition and making sure that expectations are clarified. This needs to be clearly organized, obviously, and particularly for the nature of this course, we're going to talk about a project that is so complex that it requires a team of people. I realize that we all do projects, and they might be solo projects. You might be putting together a budget for your particular area. You might do that primarily by yourself. Those are not the sorts of projects that we're going to be talking about in this course. We're going to be talking primarily about projects that require a diverse team, often from different areas of the organization, maybe even some team members from outside of your organization. But generally, a project of such complexity that it requires people from different vantage points, different areas of expertise. For the most part, we're going to be talking through this course from the vantage point of the project manager, although I recognize that you may find yourself in a different role in this project. So I like this quote. A project is a problem scheduled for solution. It's not taken lightly. It's not just hoping everything will get done if people want to. It's really organizing this project so that you can minimize your potential problems. Certainly you can identify them ahead of time if you allow some sufficient planning. And that you are going to try to improve the likelihood of success by managing and organizing this project. So why do we do project management? Well, for a couple of reasons. And I have a hard time often convincing people of the first bullet point there, that we actually do save time and money in the long run if you spend time planning up front. And as many of you probably know, the planning phase is often the most endangered on these big projects. Project sponsors or major stakeholders, they want to just get going on this thing. And enough of the planning, let's break ground. Enough of the planning, let's start implementing something. Enough of the planning, we need to see some results. We need to see that this thing is happening. And this creates a lot of pressure on the project manager to fight back and allow sufficient planning time so that in the long run of the project, the likelihood of going over the schedule or going over the budget or suffering from something called scope creep, where the deliverables have gotten much bigger than you had originally hoped for, the planning phase is your best weapon to ensure that you do save money and time in the long run. But my experience has been that this has been a difficult struggle for many project managers in a lot of organizations. Okay, other reasons for it. First, one is to gain control over the project so that it doesn't control you. I've spent many long nights worrying about projects and finding that that the more likelihood of getting some sleep during a project, sorry, I'm stumbling on my words here, that I sleep better on the project if I have the tools in place and I have a sense of control over the project. So this course is designed to help get that kind of control. It helps keep the budget and the schedule in line, because you have a budget and you have a schedule and you have used a methodical method to develop them. It helps you to meet the goals and thus satisfy your stakeholders, and also to reduce frustration for everybody who is part of that project, to make sure that they understand where the project's going and that they can see that there is a strong likelihood of it being successful. So some project management roles. You'll see in the smallest circle here is the project sponsor. Some people call this the project owner, but this person or group of people are responsible for the project. If you think about a classic project in the hospital environment, you would have perhaps the board of trustees wants your hospital to create a surgery center addition or renovate the labor and delivery suites, or implement consolidation of a project that I actually did, which was consolidating the credentials verification function for a system so that it would be more efficient and easier on the physicians in terms of submitting various credentials information each year in order to ensure that you have privileges. And we'll talk about that project a little later in this course. But the idea is there's some sort of project sponsor. You may be the project sponsor. You may be, as a vice president of medical affairs, you might have a project manager who's going to implement a particular project for you. Perhaps it is automating the operating room or replacing the operating room information systems. And you may have an IT person who is managing that project for you, but you are the one who is ultimately responsible for that project. So you have a vested interest in it. You might not be rolling up your sleeves and actually working on the project, but that project manager reports to you on a regular basis so that you can be assured that it is proceeding as required. So the project sponsor role is critical, and particularly in complex organizations such as hospitals, it is really important that a project sponsor has bought into the project, understands it, and serves as an advocate for that project. The project manager, as I mentioned previously, is going to be the focus of this course, at least from the project manager's vantage point. But this is the person who does roll up their sleeves. This is the person who does understand the details of the project and drives the effort to clarify what the expectations are for the project, put those in writing, focus on defining what those deliverables are and what kind of work it's going to take to get them done, and from there, determining what the schedule is, what tasks have to happen before the next task can begin, organizing a team, and putting together the resources on who's going to work on what tasks and how much that's going to cost and what equipment needs to be purchased. So we're working our way through that triple constraint I was talking about. We're talking about the scope, we're talking about the schedule, and then we're talking about how much it's going to cost. The project manager is responsible for assuring the quality of the project, identifying the risk, making sure that that risk is mitigated, and then on top of all of these, what I'll call the kind of the technical aspects of the project, there's the whole human resource part of it, which is managing members of a diverse team, and also working with the stakeholders and the project sponsor and communicating throughout the project on how it's going, decisions that need to be made, sometimes unpopular decisions that need to be made, and overall being an advocate for the project. So the project manager role is very complex. The members of the team, there's a primary team that's working on the meeting more frequently to talk about the project, and on a regular basis making sure that key deliverables are being addressed. This team is actively working on parts of those deliverables. As I mentioned before, they often come from diverse aspects of the organization. In many projects, they don't on a regular basis report to the project manager. They just report to the project manager for this project, which adds some interesting human resource complexities. But the team is generally the one that meets with the project manager every week or maybe every other week, depending on the size and scope and schedule of the project. But they are the core team. Then there is this gigantic group that I will just lump together and call stakeholders, although they are very heterogeneous. The stakeholders can be primary stakeholders. They can be what I'll call end users to the project. If let's say you are a project sponsor for that operating room information system, you have an IT guy managing the project. He or she has a team of people working on that project. And a primary stakeholder of yours may very well be the chief of surgery. It might be the chief of anesthesia. And it also might be some of your high-volume surgeons. And don't forget the OR nurses. And all of these people may have different ideas of what that OR information system should look like. Also part of your stakeholders would be perhaps the CEO of your organization. There might be board members. There might be neighbors next to the OR suite that have some stake in the project, especially if there's going to be some sort of installation. It might be other people in the IT area where this OR information system needs to interface with other information systems throughout the organization. So it can be a very diverse and large group of stakeholders, some of which we'll call primary stakeholders and others which I'll call secondary stakeholders, and we'll get into that in a bit. But identifying these stakeholders up front is critically important. And finally, as I mentioned earlier, you may find yourself in all of these roles on different projects. And if you look at it, you may be able to think off the top of your head where you have served as a sponsor, a project manager, a member of a team, and a stakeholder. And you may be at this point in time involved with projects where you find yourself in these different roles wearing these different hats. And so from the vantage point of the project manager and focusing this course on that, my goal is not only to make you a more effective project manager, but also to improve your effectiveness when you serve in these other roles as well. A key part of being a project manager is this concept of active delegation. You're responsible for all of the work. And clearly the buck stops with the project manager in terms of accountability for the project. But it is a critical piece to say that managing that work does not mean you do all of the work. And so it's working with members of your team and getting a level of confidence so that you can help them to get pieces of this project accomplished without you having to intervene constantly and without you having to intervene to the extent that you have to actually perform the tasks yourself. I like to throw this in here because I've lived this. Three basic categories of project managers. One is those who watch what happens. They're very passive in the project management role, and they're just confident that things will get done, or they're just so overwhelmed that they're paralyzed with fear, and so it's a very passive role of watching what happens. Those who make things happen, they're driven, they're organized, they are highly focused on this project, even if they have other responsibilities in addition to it. And then, unfortunately, I have early in my career, I found myself in this third category, those who wonder what the heck happened. And this is obviously a role we don't want to be in, but this is where, at the end of the project, you find yourself going to the project sponsors and trying to explain yourself and how this thing got so wrong so fast. And this can happen where any areas of that triple constraint blow up, whether your scope has just gotten completely out of control, your budget is not recognizable, and your schedule, your project has gone way over the assigned schedule. Or that last component where I was talking about quality, you go through your entire project, you get to the end, and your end user or your major stakeholder refuses to accept it because it does not meet what they define as satisfactory quality. And so we will spend some time talking about avoiding that disaster. So the project management piece has, but I'll just oversimplify a bit here and talk about skills and tools. There are some critical skills required for a project manager. These are not all-inclusive, but they're some of the major ones. Communication. If there were a subtitle to this course, it would be communication, because that project manager needs to be very adept at communicating with very different audiences. The project sponsors need concise, organized, and often very high-level descriptions of how the project is doing. Sometimes in an elevator speech, very, very short ability to communicate the key components of the project. Very different communication skills for members of your team, particularly if they come from diverse areas of the organization. You might be talking with someone from IT. You might have someone else from finance, some people from the clinical areas, and your ability to communicate with each of them so that they understand what you're asking for requires a different set of communication skills or even a communication language. And then there are those stakeholders and how you communicate with them, how often, in what forum, and they all require different levels of communication. So I like to say that the project manager needs to be bilingual or multilingual in terms of communicating with a very diverse audience. Negotiation skills throughout the project. At the beginning, negotiating what the scope's going to be, negotiating what the scope is not going to include. And then throughout the project, as people try to take resources away or shorten your schedule, trying to negotiate that, and we'll talk about that extensively throughout the course on how to defend your project and negotiate with diverse audiences. Peacemaking, there will likely be disagreement among stakeholders, among members of your team, about what the project involves and how to get there, and the project manager needs to make sure that that you're able to intervene. And then quite a bit of chaos. Even though this course is talking about defining the project and putting together the tools, it is very clearly a chaotic environment in terms of the environment around you and the other stakeholders and other factors that can come to play in your project. And so it's trying to keep some sanity in that chaos, and developing some tools to allow you to do that. There are clearly other skills that we will talk about throughout the course and on the discussion board, such as the need to be decisive in the project, the importance of honesty and transparency in the project. So there are a lot of other human resources skills, communication skills, leadership skills that the project manager needs to demonstrate. In terms of tools, which will be another big focus of the course here, is that we'll be talking about developing and using schedules, using your skills to get proper allocation of resources, and that involves negotiation often, talking with other members of your organization to get people assigned to your project and to keep their consistency with the project so that they're not assigned and then pulled away. Then developing those budgets, there are reports to be developed, there are reports that you might require as a project manager, and reports that your project sponsor might require. So there are a lot of tools to be used too. And also, there is an important IT tool called Microsoft Project. It's going to be an optional there will be an optional demo for you available linked into the Blackboard site if you would like to become familiar with that piece of software. So that's another tool that you can use as part of the project. I'd like to speak for a few minutes about some differences between what I'll call the functional manager, and that would be a classical manager in a hierarchical organization, and then the project manager. The functional manager it often gets to that role by some sort of expertise in the department or departments that he or she is managing. Also, it's more of an analytical approach. It's a lot of monitoring to make sure that the operational dimensions are being met, that the FTEs are under control, that the budget is under control, that even a revenue budget is developed and then monitored. And it's more of a supervisor role in the organization in terms of just overseeing the day-to-day operations or the functions of the organization. And contrast that with the project manager, whom I've already said might also be a functional manager in their day-to-day work, but is also now taking on a project in addition. And you'll see that the expertise is not necessarily in managing particular departments, but in managing across departments and managing a diverse team, and managing a project that has stakeholders in various different functional areas. The approach is much more of a systems approach. It's taking a bigger picture of the organization, not just within a particular department, and trying to tie that together. And then finally, rather than, although there is some supervision of members of the team, it's really facilitating to get this project implemented in a often a very functional organization. What I like to think of is when I've been hired as an external consultant to a to an organization to manage a project, I sometimes see my role as forcing a project through an organization that's resisting me. Not because the project isn't what that organization needs, but because there's so much emphasis on the functional side that it's seen as an interference of their work, or it's seen as not being as important as day-to-day operations. And my project management focus is to try to facilitate this project in spite of the resistance so that I can get that organization to the other side and have this project implemented. I try to do it with minimal collateral damage, fully understanding what the functional managers are facing, but still being firm enough to get this project implemented. And sometimes that's what's required in an organization, is to have somebody from the outside who understands the function and what goes on in the day-to-day operations, so that they can assist and facilitate and encourage those functional managers to help with the project. I wouldn't necessarily say that you make friends in that role, but it's a critically important role nonetheless. So why do projects fail? This is by no means an all-inclusive list. The list can go on and on, but some primary reasons are not enough resources assigned to the project. Either there wasn't a clear budget, or the estimating technique was faulty, or the scope has exploded so that suddenly the costs are insufficient to meet the new deliverables for the project. Not enough time. There's always pressure to do these projects in a very short period of time, and it might be that either the project manager was not aware of how much time it would take, was overconfident for the time, or was not able to sufficiently fight for the schedule that was required. Unclear project expectations. I have been accused of being way too detailed in defining the scope of the project, and I wasn't always that way. Unfortunately, early in my career have had a few projects where I was not sufficiently clear and did not sufficiently clarify expectations with the stakeholders on the project scope. And now I have learned that the more I can do up front in clarifying what that scope is going to be, the more likely that the stakeholders will be satisfied with the project at the end. So I accept the criticism of being too detailed in terms of clarifying project expectations, but I have learned that it's better to err on that side than being unclear. Disagreement among stakeholders, again, that's something that can be worked on up front in clarifying what the expectations of the project are and making sure that stakeholders understand that that what they are asking for may not be possible in this project. It may be something that is addressed better in a different project, but to get that up front so that they might see where they disagree with one another, but that this project needs to have some sort of clear scope and some agreed-upon process on how it's going to be handled. So better to have disagreement up front and get that on the record than have it at the end or even throughout the project. Lack of support. We'll talk about this when we talk about different organizational structures, but particularly in an organization that does not have full-time project managers and is focused on day-to-day operations, it is critically important to have the support of senior management and people who can allocate resources to your project. It is critically important to have that support up front through the duration of the project, and you can't assume that it's there. You have to keep making sure that it's there, and then at the end of the project. Scope creep is probably enemy number one of projects, and we'll talk about that at length. But the idea of scope creep is that's adding little tasks to the project bit by bit. They seem innocent enough at the beginning, but they can really add up and can derail a project. So scope creep is certainly a major reason why projects fail. And then just uncontrolled changes to the project once it has started. And there's also a tool that we will talk about to manage this as well. And it's called a change control system. It's not rocket science, but it involves implementing some rules to the project that make changes difficult. Not necessarily popular, but again, something to help ensure the success of the project. So here's the triple constraint triangle. I was talking about the triple constraint earlier and the fact that quality is also a critical dimension, so I added to this triangle. You'll be a little bit sick of this triangle by the end of the course, but it helps me to convey to you where we are in the triple constraint throughout this course, and also just to emphasize the importance of these dimensions. So just to recap real quickly, the scope of the project is generally also the deliverables, and it's what the project is trying to accomplish, its size, its magnitude, what you're promising, what your goals are. So that is the scope. The cost is generally the budget. What should it cost? What's a reasonable cost in order to complete the project and in order to achieve those deliverables that have been promised? And then there is the time aspect, which is developing the schedule. How long should it take to complete this project? There is something called a critical path, which we will cover, and that is the absolute minimum amount of time that you need to allocate for your project. Your project cannot be done in any shorter period of time than the critical path, and I will show you how to do that and how that can be used in ensuring that your schedule is sufficient for your project. So there are four primary project phases. As you know by now, I am not an academic to the extent that I focus on theory. I focus very much on the application. And so you will find many project management books that will tell you that there are five phases. You'll find project management books that say that these four items are not called phases. They're called project process groups. I find it easier to focus just on these four. And not worry so much about the theory, but how we're using them and why we're even breaking this down into phases. So one more point of clarification here. These phases they're not discrete. It doesn't mean you finish the definition phase and then stop and start into the planning phase. Sometimes these projects are more organic and you'll have some overlap between phases. But for the purpose of just outlining how a project proceeds, here are the four. So the defining phase is where you're just clarifying what projects you're going to proceed with as your organization. You're going to be prioritizing different projects. You're going to be evaluating them, hopefully based on some sort of objective criteria, not just subjective. Some organizations, they really end up just slugging it out behind closed doors to decide whose project's going to proceed. I'd like to raise the bar a bit and introduce some objective criteria, even though there is some subjectivity to some of the criteria, but putting some sort of tool in place so that it's not just subject to politicking and who has power and who gets the resources. Also in the defining phase is clarifying what the expectations are of the stakeholders for the project. Assuming you've completed the first bullet point and decided which projects you're going to proceed with, defining that scope, developing something called a work breakdown structure, which I will show you what I mean by that. But it's essentially defining how much work is going to go into meeting the project deliverables, specifically by task. And then at this phase, it's also important to identify to the extent that you can any problems, constraints, challenges, getting buy-in, some things you already know up front are going to challenge your project. It's good to highlight them here, maybe identify them as risks, and then develop a plan for how you're going to approach those. In the planning phase, we're going to be spending a great part of the course on the planning phase, and that is developing what I'll call just the work plan, and that is developing the tools related to the triple constraint. And this is where you start breaking your work plan into phases and tasks, and setting up milestones for checking on your project. You will develop something called a network diagram, which takes that work breakdown structure I was talking about a moment ago and developing it into a timeline. You'll get resources and commitments for your project, develop budgets, develop a critical path, which we will talk about, and then finally getting approval for your project plan by those project sponsors, by your key stakeholders, so that you can move forward. The execution phase is really getting into a lot of the management aspects, and you may recall that I was talking about skills a few slides ago, where you're talking about negotiating and peacekeeping and communicating. This is where your leadership qualities come into play, where you're overseeing the project, you're trying to keep your team motivated, keep momentum going, and monitoring the tools, monitoring to make sure your deliverables are on track, your budget and schedule are on track, and generally keep this project moving forward by being decisive, by solving problems and being an overall advocate for your project. Finally, there's this closeout phase, which is often overlooked. And we won't spend a lot of time on this in this particular project, but I'm sorry, in this particular course, but it's not to discount its importance. There's a real need to develop some sort of final report. What you set out to do, and then did you achieve that? If you did not achieve that, why didn't you, or what did you do instead? But some sort of final report tying back to your original objectives and how you performed. Critically important in this closeout phase is obtaining formal acceptance of the work. Many of us know about the Cedars-Sinai disaster out in Los Angeles. Cedars-Sinai Medical Center set out to develop a new clinical information system several years ago. It was supposed to be state-of-the-art. An enormous amount of money and resources and time was spent on putting this whole thing together, defining it, planning it, executing it. When it got to the closeout phase, the medical staff refused to accept the work. Information systems was not just paused. It wasn't just, you know, put on hold to then implement. It was scrapped, and it was a very expensive lesson on why it's critically important up front to get buy-in from your key stakeholders and to clarify expectations and to involve them in that planning phase so that there are no surprises. In the closeout phase, there is acceptance of work. There might be a little list of to-dos to do, such as a punch list, not uncommon, but it's not putting acceptance of the whole project in jeopardy. This is a key point, and bullet number two, the idea is no surprises. Have worked out all of the kinks throughout the project to make sure that you are going to get acceptance of the project itself. And then an important component is reviewing the successes and disappointments of the project to make sure that your team and you have some frank discussion on what went well and what didn't, that you yourself think about this project and what you could have done differently as a leader, that you talk with your project sponsor and stakeholders to make sure that their expectations were met and how they might like to do it differently next time. Many of us manage multiple projects over our careers, and I have found that the best way for me to improve my success as a project manager is if I am honest and thorough in reviewing at each project what I could have done differently and what was done well. So that's a critically important point. And when you're doing it with your project team, it's often nice to do this as part of a celebration, that you have successfully completed the project. You might be celebrating over a pizza or a lunch or some sort of little party, and as part of that, allow them to review what went well and what didn't. So this is the end of the first presentation for the project overview. There will be a second one to follow. Thank you.